Accession number 19904, Reel 1.
Interview with Professor Adrian Shepherd in Montreal, 14th November 1999. Could you please tell me about your early life in Belgium?
Well, my story, like everyone's story, begins when I was born in 1936 in Belgium. My parents were Romanian. We were of Jewish origin, we're Jewish. And we lived quite happily in Belgium as a family until the war broke out. At that time, I was in the beginning of the war, things still apparently seemed quite normal, especially because we were of Romanian origin. I don't exactly know why, but apparently Romanians were not persecuted in the very beginning of the war. Eventually, when my parents realized that a number of their friends, including some Romanian friends, were disappearing or having a hard time, they decided to go into hiding and to hide my brother and me. We were two children, my brother Claude and myself. And we, I was hidden by the Brouwer family outside of Ghent in a little town called Saint-Denis-Westrem, where I lived basically during the whole war. And my brother lived in a separate family in a town called Merelbeek, and was hidden by family, similar family, similar context, family called Dope.
And how was contact made by your parents with the De Brouwer family?
I've always tried to find out exactly how that contact was made. I'm not quite sure I have the right story, because Mr. and Mrs. De Brouwer, my adoptive parents, are no longer alive. A friend of my mother told me the following story, that my father, who also was an architect, knew a priest. I believe he was working on a church or something, and through the priest he met the De Brouwers, or he heard of the De Brouwers, who they thought would be a family that could take me in. And I think this is how the contact was made. I remember once speaking to Mr. De Brouwer, who told me he met my mother for the first time when she was rather desperate. This was in, I don't know, probably end of 41, beginning of 1942, when she came to the bank, of which she was the director, the large bank in Ghent. And sort of spoke to him, and she was, and the arrangements were made right there at the bank. But the exact, I'm not entirely sure this is what happened, because I heard contradictory stories about it.
Had you been going to school?
I'd gone only to kindergarten in Ghent. I vaguely remember being sent to school, not very far from my house, but. You must remember I was 6 years old when I was taken in by the family. So if I went to kindergarten, it was really could only have been for a matter of months. It must have been during the wartime, of course, but perhaps in 1941. In fact, kindergarten was the end of my formal schooling until after the wartime.
What language did you speak at home?
We spoke French at home. My parents were Romanian. I believe they did speak Romanian at home, but they were perfectly bilingual. My father spoke immaculate French, and so did my mother. They were both fairly well educated. My father had done, after all his studies at the University of Ghent in French. But I'm told that until the age of five, I spoke Romanian fluently. I can't recall that at all. But friends, it's only obvious that you speak. You also know the language of your parents. But I remember distinctly that the language of the family was French. There's no doubt about it.
Can you remember any changes in the circumstances of your parents' life before you were taken into hiding?
No. I remember, strangely enough, for instance, when war was declared, I believe it was May the 10th, but the date, I mean, I've been told later, and I remember that we expected the German invasion, and I also remember my father putting, not masking tape, but some sort of tape all over the windows. We were told to do that, not to blacken them, but simply in case they broke. Hopefully the tape would keep the glass together. I can remember that. And I can remember when the war broke out, sort of hiding away in our basement like everyone else did, but not too much, too much more. I can remember quite well, as a matter of fact, when preparations were being made for my hiding, that I do remember in detail. I must backtrack for a moment. In fact, my brother was hidden before me. He was hidden by a family in Ghent. I believe their name were Nellis, N-E-L-L-I-S. And I was going to be hidden later. I'm not quite sure exactly why and how. But I also know that my mother learned that the family that took in my brother actually led a very social life and took my brother around everywhere, and he had been seen around Ghent in cafes and so on, and my mother panicked and took him away from that family, trying to find a different family that would take him in. And so the family was reunited then for a short while. I wasn't hidden yet. And then one day I remember my mother telling me that I was going to go and live somewhere else in the country, and a lady was going to come to the house, and she was only going to take one of us, and the other one and the other child would go in a different place. And the lady turned out to be Mrs. De Brouwer, who came in, met the two of us, made the choice, I don't know according to what criteria. Apparently I was charming when I was a kid. That's what she told me, but many years later, anyway, she decided to take me, to opt for me. And I remember my only reaction was that, once again, my brother was the lucky one. I was the one being taken away. In fact, I turned out to be the luckier one of the two. And she came back. I remember I liked her from the very beginning. She was a very warm person, a mother of five children, who I think understood our plight perfectly well. Anyway, she came back a couple of days. I remember leaving the house with my belongings to go to Saint-Denis. In the meantime, my parents left the house we were living in, and they went into hiding, taking my brother along with them. I think I have the chronology right. They asked my family to help them find a home for Claude. And the De Brouwers found the Doe family, who lived, as I said, in a very similar circumstances outside of Ghent. Ironically, my parents were arrested the day that the Dopes were to take in my brother. In fact, my brother was present at the moment of the arrest, but was able to hide from the Germans, ran up in an attic and so on. And eventually, this close friend of my mother, Germaine Van Oise, the only person who knew where my brother and I were hidden during the wartime, managed to rescue my brother from the house. It's a long story of what happened and how it happened. But so after the arrest of my parents, then my brother then lived for the rest of the war with the Dope family, and I lived with the Brouwer family. And we never met during the war. Well, I shouldn't say we never. We met, I believe, twice or maybe three times during the whole war. I think I went over once or twice to Merlebeek, and Claude came a couple of times to Saint-Denis to meet me. And I remember also feeling like a total stranger in front of my brother. We shook hands like total, like little polite boys did, you know. But And finally, we were only reunited when, at the end of the, not at the moment of liberation, actually later than that, because my father came back from the camps about 6 months after the liberation. So that's when we met and, again.
Did he assume a new name?
Yes, we both had a new name. I was called Simons, Adrien Simons, and so did my brother. My brother had the same name, Simons, and I should also add the family, the Debrow family, had also hidden another little Jewish girl who was in fact there before me. That was one of the reasons, by the way, they didn't want to take, they felt they had already six children of their own and I was going to be the seventh member of the family. The little girl was called Monique Mogulski and she changed her name to Monique Michaud. And, but my brother and I had the same assumed name during the wartime.
And the initials of that name corresponded to your original name?
That's right. For some strange, well, not strange reason, they thought it was a matter of safety that we would have maintained the same initials, AS and Mimi and Monique, I should say, Monique Mogulski, Monique Michaud. I believe I was told that our initials could possibly be found in some clothing. You know, at the time, children very often had little labels with their letters initialed in their clothing for, I know, when you went to school, in case you lost your clothing, your gloves, and so on. This is what I had been told. Well, I suppose it makes sense.
Can you recall arriving at the Debrauer house?
Yes, that was perhaps the most momentous moment of my hiding. I arrived. I left the house, I remember clearly, with my one or two suitcases basically full of clothing and some photographs that I was given, and I didn't know where I was going to go, and we took the train to the station of Saint-Denis, and of course there were no cars, so we walked to the house, which was what one would describe as a small chateau, which was called Les Hêtres, the beech trees. That was the name of the place. And I'd never seen such a big house in my life. I'd never seen such a big garden. And I remember arriving sort of slightly overwhelmed, afraid I might lose my way even in this place. And I can remember everybody was kind of waiting for me. They had been told this little boy was going to arrive and live with them. And I was received in a very warm way.
What time of day was this?
It was the end of the day. It must have been 5-6 o'clock in the afternoon, because it was shortly before dinner. That's what I remember.
Was it in the autumn?
I don't recall. I could give you the exact month, but I remember it sort of being dark, and at least if my memories are correct, and I with Mrs. Brauer, who introduced me to all the children, who later on, by the way, I was told that all the children were, there was a little office of Mrs. Brauer right next to the entry, and there were all five or six of them apparently making little drawings of Adrian, what they thought I might look like. I've never seen these drawings, but apparently this is how they kept all the children quiet. They were trying to invent me or imagine what I could look like. And I arrived, anyway, I arrived in the house. There was a large staff of servants, I remember, and the children and the parents. And I was shown to my room. There was the governess, who I remember being particularly kind, who looked after all the children. And but I was clearly nervous. I mean, it was an environment which I had never seen, and it also was a very formal way of life, which certainly wasn't ours in Ghent. And then we went down for dinner at a certain time. We all got cleaned up and dressed and so on. It was, and I began eating, and obviously the moment or the event must have been overwhelming, and I became terribly ill, that I can remember. And although I was terribly shy, I was amazingly shy as a child, I remember I vomited. I was taken to the washroom, I was cleaned up and so on, and the governess took me to bed and put me in my room, and I think Mr. or Mrs. Brow came to see me after and said a few very nice things and so on. It was, but that sort of marked my entry at the Brow. So it was, one has to bear in mind, I was a six-year-old child being sort of taken away, placed in a totally different environment, totally overwhelmed by everything. And I think it was a case of tremendous nervousness. But I can also recall now that I was aware already of the kindness, especially of the governess, who we all call Zezel. Zezel, by the way, was the child's abbreviation for Mademoiselle, but until she died, she remains Zezel to all of us. So that was my baptism, or my introduction to the Brouwer family.
Did you have your own room?
Yes, I had my own room. I always had my own room. That's interesting because there were parents, and as I mentioned, seven children and servants living in the house, but Monique and I had our respective rooms, and my room was somewhat of a refuge, naturally. It was the one place in the house where, you know, I was alone sometimes. Again, one has to remember, one lived, the process of life was a collective one. You know, one did everything sort of together, one played together, ate together, we're always together. So my room was my place of my own. I don't remember too much about the room. I remember the photographs of my parents, which I put on the mantelpiece, and it was a nice, pleasant, comfortable room overlooking the garden in the front of the house. And I also remember very well, especially in the beginning of my stay there, Mr. Brouwer coming up every night after dinner and sort of would talk to me about myself, about my parents and so on. And that was a place where it became part of the ritual of living there. Sort of, after dinner, which was the evening dinner, which was a very formal sort of moment, the one time in the family where we all got together and things were discussed or punishments were meted out or whatever, and then we sat in the living room for a little while. And the young ones went sent immediately to bed. The older ones could still play or talk or watch movies and so on. And then the day ended with family prayers in front of a crucifix. We would all pray every single night. Basically, just the children, the governess, and the parents. And then we went to bed. And then Mr. Brouwer would come up to my room. And that was the moment when he would talk to me. And of course, there was a question of safety. Part of the reason was to, he was very concerned about Adrian being maybe speaking out too much. Although servants were certainly very trustworthy people, but I might say things I wasn't supposed to say. So every night he would come to my room and tell me to remember the fictitious story, why I was living there, that I was Belgian, I wasn't Romanian, that I was Catholic, I wasn't Jewish, that my name was, I sort of had to forget my original name, which was Sapkaru, no, I had become Simons, and he told me this was only for a while, but I had to be terribly careful about it, and these were so there was the obvious safety factor, and not only safety factor for me, but safety factor for the whole family, because the consequences could have been enormous had I been found out. But also, I think he wanted to comfort me and to talk about my parents and so on. So there was two sides, you know, sort of one which was security side, the other one which was very human side. And he always he was very physically and how can I say, physically and morally, a very courageous man. And I think he was very concerned about my own courage, which, you know, I think all his children have had that quality, and that I think comes directly from him, you know. So I remember the word, if we'd courageux, you know, which was often mentioned. I remember I used to enjoy his visits. I must say I was terribly afraid of him, you know, but I was intimidated by him. He was a very imposing man, and tall, I thought very handsome. He was a sort of born leader, a person in whom I had complete faith and so on. But I also I think all of us liked him a great deal. So the although there was an element of fear, there was also an enormous amount of affection. So that's why I enjoyed his visits. And although every time he knocked at my door, I didn't know whether he was going to come and talk to me about something which I did, which was wrong, and I was going to be scolded. But it was very rare. Sometimes I was scolded, and I think most of the time I deserved it. But that was all part of the ritual. I don't know, by the way, interestingly enough, if he came up on such a regular basis to Monique's room. But you also must remember, I was 6 and she was 12, and she was an older, more mature person, and she was, I think, very withdrawn. And I think once I was completely integrated, I was just part of the family. So perhaps contact was much easier with a 6-year-old than with a 12-year-old than a withdrawn 12-year-old. So that might have something to do with it, but I'm not sure.
You've described the end of the day. What was the course of a normal day, and including your education?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I remember best about life at Les Hêtres was the meals, strangely enough. The meals, again, one has to remember, we were, there was never a meal with less than 10 people around the table. No, I shouldn't say always, because some of the children were sent to boarding schools in Brussels, so they weren't, I think, 2 or 3 even at one time were absent from the house, but at least in the summertime, the meals were large, were important happenings, and there were 4 meals a day like that: le déjeuner, le dîner, le goûter at 4 o'clock, and the meal at night. Now, the evening meal was, of course, the thing that remains most engraved in my memory for a number of reasons. First of all, we had to wash up. We had to sort of be inspected, you know, make sure that we were properly dressed, properly, that we were clean, our hands, our ears, and so on, were well combed, and so on. And then we went all together to the dining room, sitting around this large table, and we and the young ones could not talk during the meal unless you were talked to. It was that sort of environment, that era too. And the middle of the meal was always interrupted by the BBC News I don't know how, but Mr. Brau managed to keep his large radio set. The Germans had requisitioned all the radio radios in Belgium, but we had one, and we could listen to the BBC in English. And during the what we call the journal parlé, the news, everybody was totally silent. One couldn't trust German news. One only trusted the BBC. And so the ritual of the news was kind of interrupted the meal and made the whole the meal a bit more solennel. And I also remember the news always began and possibly ended with the four notes of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, pa-pa-pa-pam, which still today has a sort of magical or mystical quality. The other thing that sort of impressed me about the BBC news, it was English, and we couldn't understand English. So it was a bit like Latin in Mass. It must have been important, it must have been something, because we couldn't understand it. Of course, the parents could. So anyway, I'm sorry, I'm departing a little bit from the story of the day, but the meal, the evening meal was this the most important of the four meals. But the rest of the day, of course, many things happened. We played a lot, especially the two other boys, Jacques and Jean-Marie, were younger than me. I was situated right between the boys and the girls. There were the two boys and me, then the three girls. And we were, there was Jean-Marie, who was about 4 years old when I was six, and Jacques, who was a year younger. So he must have been about five when I arrived there. So it was a pretty continuous scale, going from three to four from 4 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old, and then the girls who were 8 and 9 and 10 roughly, and Monique Mogulski, the oldest one of them all, who was 12. And of course the oldest ones went to school, and the youngest ones still played for most of the day. We did, since I was six, and I couldn't go to school, I couldn't leave the house, basically I never left the house.
The names of the girls.
Oh, the names of the girls. There was the youngest one of the girls, who was just about 20 years older than me, was Colette. Then was Brigitte, who was about 2 years older than me, and then Monique, the oldest one, who was about 3 or 4 years older than me. And finally, there was the other Monique, Monique Mogulski, who was about 12 when I was 6, so she was about 6 years older than me. So that was basically these were the people who constituted the Brouwer clan with the parents.
So there were two Moniques in the house.
There were two Moniques, yes, and they were the two oldest ones, and they were both the two girls. And we called one of them Monique Mogulski, remained Monique, and Monique de Brouwer was always called Mimi, and still is called Mimi to this day by her children, grandchildren, by everyone. Tante Mimi. Some of the children, some of the girls were sent to boarding school. The boys were studied, I believe, later on they went to the local school in Saint-Denis, and Monique and myself were given private tuition. The person that educated me for most of the year was our next door neighbor, the Baronne Demptin, and she was again a very kind lady who I don't think had too many activities during the wartime, and who was very happy to spend a half day each day teaching me the basic subject. I believe the program that she followed had been prepared by a school in Brussels for children who were in my situation, so they were able to obtain texts and a program of study, which was her guide. I never went to school. In fact, I remember being terribly envious of other children who could go to school. That was one of my great regrets as a child, that I couldn't go to school. It's hard to evaluate my education, which was done in a solitary manner. The chateau where the Demptins lived was actually right next door to the place where I lived. So I went across the field. I basically jumped the fence and I arrived in her place. I remember she was, I think, very rigorous and very, and took her task very seriously. Academically, how valid it was, I'm not quite sure. I know I did have a bit of difficulty when I went back to school after the war, but I think I've